Chapter 11. The Lion Roars. When the whole party was finally awake, Lucy had to tell her story for the fourth time. The blank silence which followed it was as discouraging as anything could be. "I can't see anything," said Peter, after he had stared his eyes sore. "Can you, Susan?"
"No, of course I can't," snapped Susan.
"Because there isn't anything to see. She's been dreaming. Do lie down and go to sleep, Lucy."
"And I do hope," said Lucy in a tremulous voice, "that you will all come with me, because I'll have to go with him whether anyone else does or not."
"Don't talk nonsense, Lucy," said Susan. "Of course you can't go off on your own."
"Don't let her, Peter. She's being downright naughty."
"I'll go with her, if she must go," said Edmund. "She's been right before."
"I know she has," said Peter, "and she may have been right this morning. We certainly had no luck going down the gorge. Still, at this hour of the night,
and why should Aslan be invisible to us? He never used to be. It's not like him. What does the DLF say?"
"Oh, I say nothing at all," answered the dwarf. "If you all go, of course I'll go with you, and if your party splits up, I'll go with the High King. That's my duty to him and King Caspian. But if you ask my private opinion, I'm a plain dwarf who doesn't think there's much chance of finding a road by night where you couldn't find one by day, and I have no use for magic lions, which are talking lions and don't talk, and friendly lions, though they don't do us any good, and whopping big lions, though nobody can see them. It's all bilge and beanstalks, as far as I can see."
"He's beating his paw on the ground for us to hurry," said Lucy. "We must go now. At least, I must."
"You've no right to try to force the rest of us like that. It's 4-1, and you're the youngest," said Susan.
"Oh, come on," growled Edmund. "We've got to go. There'll be no peace till we do."
He fully intended to back Lucy up, but he was annoyed at losing his night's sleep and was making up for it by doing everything as sulkily as possible.
"On the march, then," said Peter,
wearily fitting his arm into his shield strap and putting his helmet on. At any other time he would have said something nice to Lucy, who was his favourite sister, for he knew how wretched she must be feeling, and he knew that, whatever had happened, it was not her fault. But he couldn't help being a little annoyed with her all the same. Susan was the worst.
"Supposing I started behaving like Lucy," she said. "I might threaten to stay here, whether the rest of you went on or not. I jolly well think I shall."
"Obey the High King, Your Majesty," said Trumpkin, "and let's be off. If I'm not to be allowed to sleep, I'd as soon march as stand here talking."
And so at last they got on the move. Lucy went first, biting her lip and trying not to say all the things she thought of saying to Susan. But she forgot them when she fixed her eyes on Aslan. He turned and walked at a slow pace about 30 yards ahead of them. The others had only Lucy's directions to guide them, for Aslan was not only invisible to them, but silent as well. His big cat-like paws made no noise on the grass. He led them to the right of the dancing trees. Whether they were still dancing, nobody knew, for Lucy had her eyes on the lion, and the rest had their eyes on Lucy, and nearer the edge of the gorge.
"Cobbles and kettledrums," thought Trumpkin. "I hope this madness isn't going to end in a moonlight climb and broken necks."
For a long way, Aslan went along the top of the precipices. Then they came to a place where some little trees grew right on the edge. He turned and disappeared among them. Lucy held her breath, for it looked as if he had plunged over the cliff. But she was too busy keeping him in sight to stop and think about this. She quickened her pace and was soon among the trees herself. Looking down, she could see a steep and narrow path going slantwise down into the gorge between the rocks, and Aslan descending it. He turned and looked at her with his happy eyes. Lucy clapped her hands and began to scramble down after him. From behind her, she heard the voices of the others shouting,
"Hi, Lucy! Look out, for goodness sake! You're right on the edge of the gorge! Come back!"
And then a moment later, Edmund's voice saying,
"No, she's right. There is a way down."
Halfway down the path, Edmund caught up with her.
"Look!" he said in great excitement. "Look! What's that shadow crawling down in front of us?"
"It's his shadow," said Lucy.
"I do believe you're right, Lou," said Edmund. "I can't think how I didn't see it before. But where is he?
"'With his shadow, of course. Can't you see him?'
"'Well, I almost thought I did, for a moment. It's such a rum light.'
"'Get on, King Edmund, get on,'
came Trumpkin's voice from behind and above, and then farther behind and still nearly at the top, Peter's voice saying,
"'Oh, buck up, Susan. Give me your hand. Why, a baby could get down here, and do stop grousing.'
In a few minutes, they were at the bottom, and the roaring of water filled their ears. Treading delicately like a cat, Aslan stepped from stone to stone across the stream. In the middle he stopped, bent down to drink, and as he raised his shaggy head dripping from the water, he turned to face them again. This time Edmund saw him.
"'Oh, Aslan!' he cried, darting forward, but the lion whisked round and began padding up the slope on the far side of the rush.
"'Peter! Peter!' cried Edmund. "'Did you see?'
"'I saw something,' said Peter, "'but it's so tricky in this moonlight. "'On we go, though, and three cheers for Lucy. "'I don't feel half so tired now, either.'
Aslan, without hesitation, led them to their left, farther up the gorge. The whole journey was odd and dreamlike. The roaring stream, the wet grey grass, the glimmering cliffs which they were approaching, and always the glorious, silently pacing beast ahead. Everyone except Susan and the dwarf could see him now. Presently they came to another steep path up the face of the farther precipices. These were far higher than the ones they had just descended, and the journey up them was a long and tedious zigzag. Fortunately, the moon shone right above the gorge, so that neither side was in shadow. Lucy was nearly blown when the tail and hind legs of Aslan disappeared over the top, but with one last effort she scrambled after him and came out rather shaky-legged and breathless on the hill they had been trying to reach ever since they left Glasswater. The long, gentle slope, heather and grass and a few very big rocks that shone white in the moonlight, stretched up to where it vanished in a glimmer of trees about half a mile away. She knew it. It was the Hill of the Stone Table. With a jingling of mail, the others climbed up behind her. Aslan glided on before them, and they walked after him.
"Lucy," said Susan in a very small voice.
"Yes," said Lucy. "I see him now. I'm sorry."
"That's all right.
But I've been far worse than you know. I really believed it was him, he, I mean, yesterday, when he warned us not to go down to the fir wood. And I really believed it was him tonight when you woke us up. I mean, deep down inside. Or I could have if I'd let myself. But I just wanted to get out of the woods and oh, I don't know. And whatever am I to say to him?"
"Perhaps you won't need to say much," suggested Lucy.
Soon they reached the trees, and through them the children could see the great mound, Aslan's How, which had been raised over the table since their days.
"Our side didn't keep very good watch," muttered Trumpkin. "We ought to have been challenged before now."
"Hush," said the other four, for now Aslan had stopped and turned and stood facing them, looking so majestic that they felt as glad as anyone can who feels afraid, and as afraid as anyone can who feels glad. The boys strode forward. Lucy made way for them, and Susan and the dwarf shrank back.